So now let me give you an example of how the many hats that we wear as investors can become very, very confusing to the poor old investor. Okay? I struggled with this when I got started as well.
You're listening to 5-Hour Real Estate Week, where you'll learn to consistently buy real estate in only 5 hours a week. So if you're ready to invest in real estate, achieve financial freedom, and own the lifestyle you deserve, even with your job, this is the show for you. Now, here's your host, Mike Butler.
Okay, hello, Mike Butler here. And this session, our topic's going to be the many hats we wear as investors. Now, you might not think about this too much, especially when getting started, but so many times you will see, and I have seen, where investors, accountants, CPAs, different people, attorneys, they all get lopsided and they miscommunicate because they fail to understand what hat that you might be wearing. Let me give you an example. Okay, one hat that we wear as investors, and you got to think about this hat because it is part of your real estate business. For example, one hat we wear deals with the federal government. Okay, so the federal government is a partner that you're going to have whether you like it or not. So when we wear this hat, what do we need to make ourselves aware of? Well, what falls under that hat? Well, how about this? How about fair housing? So HUD has a whole department that's nationwide on fair housing. So you better be up to speed on that. That comes under your federal hat. Now there's another one that comes in there, and I talked about this partner that you will always have, and that's called the IRS. And the IRS falls under the federal hat. Now, if you know that I've just said and just mentioned the federal hat, let's go over and take a look at your next hat, and that would be your state hat for the state that you invest in. So we have state laws, and then here's a biggie, okay? Landlord-tenant law. Okay, this is your rule book. Just like the NFL, when they go back and they have a replay and they're going to review it and all this and that, well, odds are they're pulling out the rule book and seeing what the right thing is to do for that situation. Well, your landlord-tenant law, that's your rule book. That's your rules of the game, okay, involved with rental property. So you got to make sure that you know that thing inside and out. And I would encourage you to please get your own copy of your state's landlord-tenant law and make sure it's the real landlord-tenant law and not the pro-tenant friendly from the tenant's attorney's version. I see too many folks get that version. Make sure you get the real McCoy there. And that's your rule book, okay? Another one is states can enact additional things to the fair housing law. So in addition to your federal hat with the federal fair housing laws, now you've got your state hat that may add additional fair housing laws. And along with that, since we invest in real estate, well, you're going to have code enforcement. So you need to be up to speed on that, and that falls under that state hat. And finally, the state laws. So whether it be asset protection, entity structure, whatever, state taxes, setting up your LLCs, all of that kind of stuff, that falls under the hat that we wear involving when we're dealing with state issues. Okay, and then finally, the third one here is we wear our local hat. So call it for the city, the county, a parish, a village, whatever it is that is equivalent to your Mayberry or wherever it is that you invest. Well, then you're going to have to wear that hat and pay attention to what is involved under that hat. Okay, what does this involve? Well, number one, my town, for example, has added additional protected classes to the fair housing law. So you won't find the fair housing law under your federal hat is big and broad and goes across the nation. Okay, then you might find your state hat might have added something else or this or that. But when you get down to your local laws, like my town, they added some extra ones, okay? In California, I think my wife Beth went out there in, Santa Barbara, I think, and they had 17 protected classes. Now, this has probably been 4 or 5 years ago before all this nonsense started across America. So you got to wear a hat for local issues, which are enhanced and additions to the fair housing laws. You have your own code enforcement laws, probably, and all of your local laws. Okay, so the local laws, what I'm talking about here is like, imagine putting a bad tenant in. Well, many cities have what's called a public nuisance ordinance, and it's designed to go after landlords and rental property owners and property management companies that don't screen their tenants properly, and they let a bad apple get in someplace, and they're a public nuisance to all the neighbors. Okay, so you need to be aware of that. And the best way to stay up to speed with all of this is, the one I would recommend, join your local RIA group, because they do a pretty good job of letting their members know about changes in their local laws. Okay, they do a pretty good job about changes in the IRS tax code. So now let me give you an example of how the many hats that we wear as investors can become very, very confusing to the poor old investor. Okay, I struggled with this when I got started as well. So let's say, for example, if on your rental property, almost everyone recommends that you have a security deposit. Okay, so it's money held for, you put into an account, and then when the tenant moves out, you use that to offset some of the damages that our tenant caused or the tenant's responsible for. Okay, well, under your state hat, okay, listen to this carefully. So under your state hat, that falls under the landlord-tenant law, and it says that that is not your money. Okay, it is the tenant's money that you are holding. Okay, so you must abide by the terms in your local landlord-tenant law in order to be in compliant. And in my state, it says we have to have a separate bank account, not an escrow account, it says a separate bank account used exclusively for security deposits, nothing else. So, like, I'm a broker and I have an escrow account. I can't use that escrow account. No. It has to be a separate bank account used exclusively for security deposits. Now, that's what my state's landlord-tenant law says. That's the rule. Now, here's where we get sidetracked and it just make our head explode. Well, you will find, and there are accountants, CPAs, bookkeepers out there that says, oh, no, that's not your money. Okay, you've got to set that up as a liability account because that's money that you owe. Well, wait a minute. Does the IRS tell you to do that? No, the IRS does not tell you to do that. Your state law says you got to have a separate bank account used exclusively for security deposits and follow the terms that are in that paragraph. Okay. But your state's landlord-tenant law does not tell the IRS how you report income and file your tax returns. So here's what I do. So it's very, very expensive to do a tax return, and if you've got many properties, to try to set up a liability account for each individual tenant for their security deposit. That is painful. And in the real world, guys, most of the time when a tenant does move out, when you have a tenant turnover, most of their security deposit gets eaten up, okay? And there's a few where we do give them the full security deposit back because they're awesome, and that's what we want. Well, if they're not going to get the majority of that back, long story short, here's what I'm trying to tell you. Don't let your state's landlord-tenant law tell you how to file your taxes. So here's what I do. To be in compliant with the state law, I do have a separate bank account used exclusively for security deposits. However, whenever we receive security deposits, okay, and let's say when they sit down, they sign the rental agreement, the move-in inspection, all this other forms, and then they get the money for the rent and they get the money for security deposit. For tax, for IRS purposes, we report all that security deposit money as rent income. Okay? That's not illegal. It just makes it 10 times easier. It's going to save you some money. Now, when a tenant moves out, you're saying, but Mike, that's not our money. That's okay. Now, when a tenant moves out, and let's say they had an $800 security deposit and they return the place picture perfect, you can write them a check for $800 out of that bank account used exclusively for security deposits. And guess where you're going to pull it from? You're going to pull it from the rent income account for that property for bookkeeping and IRS purposes. You see what I'm saying? If that hurts your head a little bit, it did mine too. But chew on this, hit a replay, go back and listen to it again. But do not confuse federal issues, state issues, local issues. We have to wear these different hats. Okay. And you might find yourself more maybe with a homeowner association or a condo or subdivision rules or deed restrictions. Okay. So there's many hats that we wear as investors, and stay tuned on this one. Remember, life does not have a pause button or rewind button. It's up to you to take action and make things happen. Adios. See you on the next one.
Glad you joined us for another episode of 5-Hour Real Estate Week. The best thing you can do now is put this information to action. To help you get started, Mike created a free resource for you called How to Buy 50 Houses a Year, Even with Your Job. Download it now by going to mikebutler.com/50houses. And we'll see you on the next episode.